Welcome back. Great to have your company wherever you might be listening. As I mentioned off the top of the program, it's my pleasure to have a chat with the Federal Sports Minister, Mr. Richard Colbeck, who's been good enough to give us a few minutes of his time in the middle of a busy schedule. Firstly, welcome, Mr. Colbeck. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Wayne. Good to be on.
First, clarify one thing. Can you? Are you a Victorian or a Tasmanian?
Yeah, well, debated a bit. I've spent most of my life living in Tassie, and my father's family history is here, but my mum's family's from country Victoria, which is where I was born up at Yarrabin, just out of Myrtleford.
And a bit of AFL as a kid?
Yeah, I love my footy and my cricket, and I've got to say it's very, very difficult not seeing any on local grounds or on our TV screens.
So you've got your fingers as crossed as anybody about this Friday getting the green light from the government that you're part of for the two major codes in Australia and the rest of sport to get the green light to go.
Oh, look, I think I'm like everybody. It's not much fun being Minister for Sport when there's no sport going on. And so the work that we've been doing over recent weeks to develop the framework that was announced on Friday, I thought was an important part of what we're doing. And it just gives a bit of a path and some sense of what needs to be in place for sport to recommence at any level, whether it be local community sport, professional sport, or Olympic sport. So really pleased that the National Cabinet passed those frameworks on Friday.
It gave great clarity, actually, to all sports, which was fantastic, that framework. And it seemed as if you're as keen as ever to get community sport, especially kids' sport, up and running as soon as possible.
Well, look, it's the heart of so many communities, and I think it's one of the things that will bring us all back together once we work our way through this outbreak. And I just get the sense that people are busting to get out of their homes and back into some form of structured activity. And so the sooner that the states are able to see us move to the next level, which is level B in the AIS framework, the better. That means that we can start working in small groups of 10, get back into training and start getting moving again, and looking forward to potentially taking the next steps when we can get our competitions up and running again.
So how is the NRL tracking for their May 28 start date?
Well, I think that they're going okay. I think that what it really depends on now is ensuring that people comply with the biosecurity guidelines. I think that's going to be the real test. The New Zealanders obviously arrived here yesterday and have settled into their base in Tamworth. All the other teams will commence training as well. So I think people will be looking forward to that first kickoff, and all things being well, people complying properly with the biosecurity protocols, we can look forward to that commencing on the 28th of May.
And all things being well, if they commence on the 28th of May, the AFL can essentially start as soon as they want to from that date.
Well, again, the AFL need to get their model decided, and the work is going on that. I think things have changed a little bit since the early days of the discussion of the hubs in perhaps Tassie, South Australia and Western Australia. I think we've almost moved past that model now. But like everybody else in the AFL world, I'm really looking forward to seeing teams getting moving again. And that doesn't matter whether it's in kids' footy, local and country football, or seeing it back on our screens with the AFL playing again. I think we're all looking forward to that.
So in a perfect world, in your eyes, you can see in a perfect world, mid-June, borders open, fly in, fly out AFL as opposed to hub AFL.
Look, if we continue the trajectory we're on, we maintain the discipline that we have as a community, I think that is quite conceivable. Some of the states will be, I think, relatively conservative, but you saw Queensland last week make a very quick decision to allow teams to come in under a structured method of transport, onto the bus, onto the plane, to the venue and back again. So, you actually pretty much have the eastern seaboard opened up for that. And if we maintain the current trajectory that we have at the moment, I think that's a possibility. And again, it comes back to the point that I made earlier. We really do need to ensure that all those participating are following the biosecurity guidelines with respect to the rules that are set up by the codes, and I know that they've done a lot of work in designing those so that they want to see the competition up and running as well, and so it's in everybody's interest that those things occur.
And I know it's difficult to project too far forward, but a New Zealand team coming here to Australia to play sport does open it up, if it works, for other international teams to come here, like India maybe, for Test cricket?
Well, those conversations are obviously being had. Discussions about what the protocols might look like, I think, are going to be really important. They will be difficult because one of the things that's been a key part of our success is the fact that we limited access to Australia from areas where there were significant outbreaks of COVID-19, and that's contributed to the low rate of spread that we have now. So I think that we can start making those plans, working out how the competitions might work, ensuring that you have the right biosecurity protocols and the right quarantine arrangements so that we can facilitate those things. Australia is in a very fortunate position. We want to make sure that we don't lose the circumstance that we have now. We've got a very low rate of spread, so we'll have to be cautious. But I think that we would have to be prepared to consider appropriate plans put forward by the various codes. And I've got to say, I'd love to see an Australia-India test series this summer. And I'd really like to be able to see the World Cup go ahead, but that would be quite a complex protocol to bring that number of countries in from around the world.
But that's a really exciting, optimistic view for cricket fans to hear, I've got to say, Mr. Colbeck, because the T20 World Cup was one of those things that a lot of people were starting to say is a bit of a stretch too far. Multiple international teams coming here to Australia and playing in multiple states, but you don't think it's beyond the realms of possibility?
Well, the issue is not so much the teams, it's going to be the crowds, and I think that's probably one of the hurdles that we really have to consider, and probably world cricket will look at pretty closely as well. We all know the difference in atmosphere when you see a filled stadium versus one that's empty. We've had experience of that with the early rounds of NRL and Australian rules here in Australia this year. So they will be some of the broader considerations, but in a team sense, I'd like to think that we can build some protocols with the cooperation of the sport and the players. That's going to be extremely important. With appropriate quarantining and biosecurity protocols to see if we can make the competition go ahead.
Talking to Federal Sports Minister, Mr. Richard Colbeck, you did put a great framework out, step-by-step framework out to project how sport can return. Have you actually started putting together a framework as to how and maybe when crowds could return?
Look, I think that's probably the next stage in the discussion, and that's going to be focused more from the work of the states and the AHPPC. Once we start to see some of the more stringent social gathering exercises be released, and I know those conversations are being had right now, I mean, it will be an important time, but it'll also, I think, appropriately judged based on the health advice that's coming to the National Cabinet at that point in time. We all know what a huge difference in atmosphere it makes. And it'll also be dependent on us being able to do the things that we're doing now to maintain and limit community spread. So the strength in testing that we're doing around the community is going to be important. Our capacity to trace will be very, very important. And I might take the opportunity here to put a plug in for people downloading the app, because our capacity to be able to open up sport to crowds and all of those sorts of things is going to be really dependent on our capacity to track and trace and then quarantine community spread. That's been one of the things that's been really concerning for us in recent times. And so having the app to facilitate doing that quickly is going to be very, very important in our capacity to open up the sport to crowds.
So there you go, AFL fans, NRL fans, Spring Carnival fans, the carrots out there. If we download the app, then we could even have an October with a Spring Carnival, an AFL Grand Final, an NRL Grand Final with crowds, Mr. Colbeck.
Well, look, I'd love to see that. I mean, we all know what great events they are socially as well as in the context of sport. And the faster that we have the capacity to have a strong level of testing, and we're building our capacity all the time in the context of that, but then to be able to trace, track and quarantine the positive cases will make it easier for us to open the economy up. And that's one of the messages that I get back from the health experts all the time, and that's why I promote it back out into the community.
So that's outdoor sport. That's one thing. What about sports like the NBL that plays inside? They're thinking of a plan B where they might delay their season to start maybe November, December, with the option that they might be able to get some crowds back because their sport relies so much on the crowd model. Do you think that's a good idea, not everybody playing in October and maybe some sports planning for a later start with this slow creep back of crowds?
Well, look, that's going to be one of the considerations, particularly if crowd is an important element in the sport itself. And in my conversations with the health professionals through the AHPPC, there have been some conversations about the difference between indoor sport and outdoor sport and the capacity for some of the outdoor sports to be more active a little bit sooner. Those conversations, and that's based on international evidence around the spread of COVID-19 in the various environments. More information will come to light on that, and that will impact, I think, on how those sports continue. But the sports will have to make their own decisions based on what they see as the imperatives for them in the recommencement of the sport. But I know, having spoken to many of them, they're all very, very keen to return to some level of activity and get their athletes moving again, training again. And, of course, the government would like to see that happening as well, because we all know the huge importance of sport, not only in community, but it makes a big difference in the context of general well-being and mental health too. So there are a lot of aspects to consider in reopening sport in the community and getting people active.
And just on the community, is there a chance that the community model might actually be a precursor to crowds at a larger level at professional sport? Because if community sport, if kids sport outdoors is allowed, say netball is allowed, then you're kind of going to get a parent or two per child around the netball court too. So if it works with the general public adhering to spacing recommendations and we all get disciplined about how we attend our kids' sport, you might get 40 or 50 people at a netball game outside or a kids' footy game outside that shows that it can actually work.
Well, the guidelines that have been drafted contemplate those things. So the recommencement of kids' sport with small crowds and applying appropriate social distancing. And I think a demonstration of community discipline in that sense will certainly influence the decision makers because they are very, very focused on making sure that we don't have untraceable community spread. That's the real danger in managing COVID-19, particularly in a circumstance where we don't have a vaccine. And so a demonstration of community discipline, I think, will play very well into the decisions to open up for crowds for the bigger picture elements like AFL and NRL and those other codes.
Talking to the Federal Sports Minister, Mr Richard Colbeck. A couple of quick ones before I allow you to go, Mr Colbeck. The situation in some states is different to the situation in others. There might be a situation whereby South Australia, for example, that's now had 11 days without a new case, might be able to facilitate crowds quicker than a state like Victoria, who's been a bit more conservative?
Well, the point in developing the national principles actually contemplated that. It was about having a set of guidelines that weren't necessarily time-based, but were based on the actual circumstances within a particular jurisdiction. So these are the principles that might apply, and this is how you might apply them. And I think that that is actually what you will see. Some states will move before others in opening things up. In South Australia, for example, the Olympic swimmers are back in the pool, which is fantastic to see. And I'm sure that swimmers in other states are quite jealous of the fact that the guys in South Australia are back in the water. So I think it will vary. And even the guidelines contemplate different sports moving at different stages based on the sort of activity that is involved. So it will be a little uneven, I think. But the good thing about the guidelines is it gives a sense of what the framework might be at a particular point in time in context of where the broader and general community is. So it does give, as you've said, some level of certainty and where we might be at the various stages of managing our movement in the community.
Yeah, the golfers here are hearing you loud and clear in Victoria, Mr. Colby. They can't wait to pick up the clubs again. Most states are allowed to. Do you see it as safe? Two people per hole? Safe golfing?
Well, I'm on the record as having said that for a period of time. I know that one of my boys lives in Victoria and is extremely frustrated that he can't get on the golf course, and yet people in other jurisdictions can. But those are the judgments that are being made by the public health authorities within the states, and I think it just goes to the point that we were just talking about. It will be uneven. I'm sure that people will be very excited to be able to get back onto the course, and if you look at the guidelines prepared by the AIS, it contemplates the various levels of activity and the number of players that might be able to play golf together at various stages through the A, B and C series of activity. So, again, there is a framework there. My view from a national level would be that it's as even as possible, but I do recognise that some jurisdictions will make some differences.
And do you think some things are going to change in sport forever, Mr. Colbeck? No saliva to shine cricket balls has been talked about. Handshakes being a thing of the past. Do you think some things are going to be just ingrained on us to go forward with a new set of guidelines that might stick with us for a long time?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think there will be some changes, and the most obvious one that you talk about there is how you shine a cricket ball. As we grew up, we all learnt the craft. All of us that played cricket learnt the craft of maintaining a cricket ball with various crafty ways. And I think that's something that will change. And the fact that the ICC is actually contemplating using other things than sweat and saliva is a testament to that. And so, yes, there will be some things that change. What they all are, I'm not sure that I could predict straight away, but certainly shining a cricket ball is going to be one of them.
And last question, there's a radical idea to get EPL teams to Perth to play. Have you read that? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think it gives a demonstration of the great position that the Australian community has assisted us to be in by the discipline they've shown over recent times. Again, you have to deal with the issues of biosecurity and quarantine to bring them in, whether the players are prepared to be effectively locked down for a fortnight while they go through that quarantine period is another question, and I suppose it comes down to whether or not how keen they are to be back on the pitch and playing again. But it is an opportunity that has come about because of the discipline of the Australian community and the work that we've done together to get the virus under control. The thing that it will come back down to is the advice from the health authorities as to how we manage the risks appropriately, and then, of course, whether those who are participating are willing to abide by that discipline.
Fantastic to have a chat to you, Mr. Colbeck. It's enlightening for me because, you know, I've got my head so deeply and heart so deeply in this industry that I can't wait for it to come back, and so many of our listeners as well. And I'm sure, as I mentioned off the top, being a sports lover like yourself, you're pretty keen as well. The message is out there, and I don't mind giving you another plug. Hey, download the COVID Safe app. Let's get rugby league back May 28. Let's get the AFL back 2 weeks later, and let's get some crowds back, Mr. Colbeck.
Yeah, look, downloading the app is one thing that will really facilitate us getting back to sport as we know it and love it. And so I can only encourage people to do that because it will make a difference. Thanks, Dwayne. Thanks for your time.
Great to have you on, Mr. Richard Colbeck, the Federal Sports Minister. Your call's next.